is iFaith, video sermon number 38 from 1 Corinthians. We're focusing on the unity issues of the Corinthians. In fact, we're doing that in all four of these video sermons. And this particular one, which will be focusing on chapter 13, will give us the key to unity. And the key to unity, I'm not sure how well this is understood. I think many of you listening to this, you'll say, yeah, I knew that. But there's some things that really hit me on my personal spiritual retreat a few weeks ago, just about who I am. And I've tried to be open and as I share in this message. Also, I said I would show you our new book. The way we approach doctrine, whether we use it as a weapon, a bludgeon, a cudgel, do we use it as a hammer to hit people over the head? Or are we using doctrine and thinking about doctrine in the way that the New Testament writers thought about it? There's a lot to make you think, particularly in the first and last chapters of the book that Joey Harris and I did. So that's called Informed. Well, let me refer to our recent message. Paul appeals that the Corinthians cooperate with each other, that realize they're on the same team. They don't have to think identically, but they should agree that Christ is the one that they're going to be following. Let me read now one of the most beloved passages in the entire Bible. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. That's 1 Corinthians 13, 4 to 8. We'll come back to that at the end of our message. As I slowly read the letter of 1 Corinthians, a number of things hit me. And they hit me because I saw how they tie in to this beautiful ode to love, the poem about love that Paul has put in the center of his discussion of the spiritual gifts. So let me give you some examples. We won't go through every chapter. But in chapter 1, verse 2, Paul is writing to the Corinthians who are sanctified and they're called to be saints. Yes, they're sanctified. They've been made holy through Jesus when they became Christians by faith. But they're called to be saints. We've been made holy, but we're called to be holy. Some people would say, become what we are. So sanctification is not just something that happens at one point in time. It's a lifestyle. And that means that all of us are works in progress. So to be disunified with someone who's a work in progress for not being perfect, well, how are you doing, Jack? Are you really that far ahead? Are you that much more consistent? I'm not. Near the end of 1 Corinthians 1, Paul asked them to consider who they are, where they've come from. This is in verse 26 and 27. You know, not many were wise, not many were powerful or high-born. Most Corinthians were just normal Joes, normal Janes. And because many people were slaves in the first century, it could have been a third, maybe more, were slaves. The writings that survived showed that there were a number of slaves in the church too. So they certainly weren't upper middle class Christians. You might have had a few wealthy people. But for most, they were quite humble. And that's just another reason for us not to be snobbish or elitist. And we can feel, funny things, we can be all proud of ourselves for totally contradictory things. I'm proud because I went to the state university, and I'm proud because I got where I am and I never went to university. Right? Well, I'm proud because I'm such a tall person and everyone looks up to me. And I'm proud because I'm a short person, but everyone takes me so seriously. You know, we can be proud about opposite things. In chapter 2, Paul says that the powers, these are the spiritual powers behind our age, would not have crucified the Lord of glory if they had understood the mystery. They just don't get it. Powerful people tend not to get it too. The rude don't get it. They don't get Christianity. Egotists and others who've bought into the evil one's lies that it's all about you and me. In the middle of 1 Corinthians, there's a stretch of scripture from 8:1 to 11:1. It's all about giving up rights. Now, the presentation issue is idol meat, and Paul seems to be saying, we will not eat idol meat. It's too dangerous. It's too distressing. Plus, we don't want to have any part of idolatry. But that whole section is a unit. And, yeah, there's some pretty familiar verses in chapters 8, 9, 10, and 11. But to really understand them, we need to read the whole as a whole, 8:1 to 11:1. So the kind of sensitivity we should have includes the willingness to give up our rights. Paul gives other examples. He has a right to be supported by the church, but he knows that will hinder his ministry. He doesn't take advantage of that right. It's the same with the other apostles. We have rights, and this is not going to sound very American or Western or democratic. We have rights, but our first instinct cannot be to demand our rights and to stand on our rights. First, we need to look around and see how others are doing, and we may or may not have our rights. That is something that has to be let go, because culturally it's very deeply drilled in. Loving sensitivity, giving up our rights, that's what love is. Love isn't just liking someone if he doesn't cross you, admiring someone if she's supporting of you. That's really the kind of love the pagans give each other. That's like greeting your neighbors in Matthew 5. You love those who love you. There's nothing special about that. It's loving your enemy. That shows who you really are. So I've mentioned 1:2, 1:26, 2:8. If we went ahead to 14:26, we get a glimpse into what the early church was like when they met in homes. And we're told that everyone comes with a gift. Now, firstly, because we all have different spiritual gifts. That's in chapter 12, verses 6 to 10. But because we're gifted, because ministry is using the gift, we come to church ready to use our gift. Now, admittedly, that's quite difficult to do in a big group. When you've got 100 people or 200 people, if everyone is using a gift, it can be very chaotic. Not so hard when you're in a small group, though. I think what Paul is saying is that we shouldn't dominate. He says, when you come, each of you has, and he mentions a lesson, there's teaching, you have a hymn, you have a psalm, there's a revelation, you've seen something, and you want to give. Naturally, you want to give. You want to be part of it. You want to be a participant, not a spectator. And Paul urges them not to be self-focused, not to be dominating, but to allow others to participate. If you're speaking and clearly someone else really wants to share something, well, be quiet. Step aside and let the other person speak. You can control it. You can absolutely control it. I guess this also tells us that these early meetings were not short. So imagine you have 20 people meeting and everyone's got something to contribute. It may or may not be a short meeting. Maybe that's why they had meals together at the same time. In that list, though, singing and teaching seem to be at the top of the list. So coming with an insight, a teaching, or a singing, which is it's a way to get truth into hearts, that seems to be especially focused. The spiritual gifts, and particularly the miraculous ones, were abused in Corinth. Paul implies flatly in 1 Corinthians 13 that to be hung up on these more sensational or external gifts is infantile. It's not mature. We should leave that behind. And in his whole discussion of the gifts, which is really about my identity and what I bring to the table, from chapter 12 which is a long chapter, chapter 13. Chapter 14 also is a long chapter. Right at the heart of it is this beautiful poem about love. And there's a reason for that. Some New Testament scholars I've come across think, oh, Paul probably didn't write that. It doesn't matter whether he wrote it or not. They say it's a different style and it's poetry. Well, I mean, it would be exactly the kind of thing I would want at the center if I were constructing a letter like this. I don't know who wrote it. Maybe Paul, maybe not. But it's been put there. And that's his position in the wonderful letter of 1 Corinthians that has come down to us. Two more examples of humility and subjection. One is 16:16. We're told to be subject to our leaders. And yet it's not an absolute obedience or subjection. Look at 16:12 and you'll see I'm right on that. But we need to have a humility to us. And then in 15:24-28, let me just, for the sake of time, let me just refer to this. It's talking about the sequence of events at the end of time, or at the end of this part of time. All the enemies will be subdued under the feet of Christ on his throne. And then Christ gives the kingdom, the Son gives the kingdom to the Father, so that God may be all in all. Jesus Christ is subordinate to the Father, not just in this life. He was subordinate before he went down. That's why he was the one who was sent. You know, the Son wasn't going to be sending the Father to the earth or the Spirit. And he was subordinate also. Now he's ascended. He's at the right hand of the Father. And at the end, he turns the kingdom over so that God may be all in all. So Jesus himself is subordinate, obedient to the Father. And that's not just while he was on earth. That was before he came. And that's even after, if I'm reading the scriptures correctly. And if he could be subordinate and not have a problem with authority, how about you? How about me? How about us? So, wow. The key to love is humility. When I was reading this poem just a few weeks ago, I also read all of Paul's other letters. And there was a verse that hit me pretty hard in Titus 3:1. We're told to speak evil of no one and to be gentle and to show perfect courtesy toward all people. What hit me is that sometimes I don't think I show courtesy. Sometimes I can be rough and rude. And I'm glad I read Titus and 1 Corinthians together, because I realized I'm not the person I would like to be. How humble a person am I? Do I accept input, or only if it fits with my ego? Do I insist on my own way, or am I following the way of Christ? In the case of the Corinthians, they listened. After the 1st, 2nd Corinthians, it seems that they listened and changed. But we know by the end of the century, by another letter outside the Bible called 1st Clement, that same issue of factions and lack of humility, lack of love, it came up as young leaders were kicking against the older leaders. Well, I thought I would end by sharing this beautiful poem in its original language, because it's so beautiful. We'll do it in Greek and then English. He agape makuthime, Christeota he agape. Utseloi he agape. U peperelate. U fusiutai. U chaskimonai. U xeteta hotes. U paraxunatai. U legizatat kakon. U chaire pite adikia. Sung chaire de teletea. Panta stege panta, pistewe panto pidze panta hypomene. He agape u depere pipte. Or, in the NIV, familiar to so many, let the words sink in. Love is patient, love is kind. It does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud, it does not dishonor others. It's not self-seeking, it's not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. In our next lesson, we'll be looking at a different kind of disunity. That's as we begin our study of 2 Corinthians. Thanks for listening.